Thank you for supporting our annual fundraising campaign. From the bottom of our musical hearts, thank you for sitting pretty as one of radio's best friends.
We were just sitting peacefully. These are innocent citizens who don't belong to any military organization or faction. The eldest man is 70 years old.
As an Israeli attack in Gaza Sunday killed dozens of members of a displaced family who were reportedly asleep when their home was targeted, Qatar has suspended efforts to mediate a Gaza ceasefire. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia is hosting dozens of world leaders for an Arab-Islamic summit to deal with Israeli aggression. We'll go to The Hague to speak with Dutch-Palestinian Middle East analyst Moin Rabbani and also get an update on the protests in Amsterdam. Then more than 2,000 people packed the historic Riverside Church in New York City Sunday for a discussion about America and the war on Palestine, moderated by author Ta-Nehisi Coates.
This was also the place where Martin Luther King stood up against the Vietnam War and was so courageous. I want to acknowledge that in his time when he did that, a lot of people did not applaud.
We'll also hear Palestinian human rights professor Noor Erekat, author of Justice for Some. But first, we look at racist text messages telling people to report to the closest plantation sent to black people across the country by name, starting the day after Trump's election victory.
We remember what the climate in the country was like from 2016 to 2020. And so it appears that it's returning to that type of climate. Very disappointing that individuals would target African Americans with such hateful comments and commentary.
We'll speak with NAACP's Wisdom Cole and Professor Robert Greene II. He teaches at Claflin University, the oldest and first historically black university in South Carolina, and president of African American Intellectual History Society. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. President-elect Donald Trump has picked Thomas Homan to serve as his so-called border czar. Homan served as acting director of ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement, during the first Trump administration. He's backed Trump's plans to deport as many as 20 million immigrants. During a recent interview on 60 Minutes, Homan said the mass deportation campaign could also target U.S.-born children who were born to undocumented parents. He was interviewed by Cecilia Vega.
We have seen one estimate that says it would cost $88 billion to deport a million people a year.
I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Is that what American taxpayers should expect?
What price do you put on national security? Is that worth it?
Is there a way to carry out mass deportation without separating families?
Of course there's. Families can be deported together.
That interview on CBS's 60 Minutes. The appointment of Tom Homan comes as the Wall Street Journal reports advisors to Trump are considering using military bases to hold detained immigrants and military planes to carry out deportations. In other transition news, CNN's reporting Trump has offered Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik the job of U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Meanwhile, Trump has ruled out jobs in his new administration for former CIA Director Mike Pompeo and former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley. In other election news, the Associated Press has projected Donald Trump has won the state of Arizona, giving him a clean sweep of the seven battleground states. With Arizona, Trump is projected to have won a total of 312 electoral votes, Kamala Harris has won 226. In other news from Arizona, Decision Desk is now projecting Democrat Ruben Gallego has beaten Republican Carrie Lake to fill Senator Kyrsten Sinema's seat. Meanwhile, in Nevada, Democratic Senator Jackie Rosen has won re-election, defeating Republican Sam Brown. Overall, Republicans have won control of the Senate and will soon pick a new majority leader. Three senators are in the running: Senator John Thune of South Dakota, Senator John Cornyn of Texas, known as the Johns, and Senator Rick Scott of Florida. On Sunday, Trump said the next majority leader must embrace recess appointments to make it easier for him to quickly fill posts without Senate oversight. For years, both Republicans and Democrats have opposed this move. Sources close to liberal Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor says she has no intention to resign. Some Democrats have privately pushed the 70-year-old justice to step down to give President Biden a chance to nominate a successor before Trump takes office on January 20th. Meanwhile, a coalition of groups have announced plans to hold a People's March on Washington on January 18th, 2 days before Trump's inauguration. Protest organizers include Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, and the Women's March. The FBI is investigating a spate of racist text messages targeting Black Americans in the wake of Trump's election victory. The text messages were reported in states including Alabama, Missouri, the Carolinas, Michigan, Texas, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, telling recipients they were, quote, selected to pick cotton at the nearest plantation, unquote. The NAACP condemned the messages, warning Trump's election has emboldened hate groups. People as young as 13 years old were sent these messages by name. We'll have more on this story after headlines. Israel carried out deadly strikes on Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria over the weekend, while the United States bombed Yemen over the past two nights. This comes as Saudi Arabia is hosting dozens of world leaders for an Arab-Islamic summit in Riyadh to discuss Israeli aggression in the region. In Gaza, Israel struck a family home in the Jabalia refugee camp early Sunday, killing 36 Palestinians, including at least 13 children and 9 women. Relatives of the family decried the attack.
The home of Abu Sobe al-Alush was crowded with residents and not affiliated with any organization. They are simply people trying to make a living, minding their own business, and have no involvement with anyone. This strike targeted civilians who have no ties to any groups or organizations. More than 50 people were there, as their grandchildren, children, and daughters, all displaced, had taken refuge with them, seeking safety. The house was struck while they were all inside.
Later in the broadcast, we'll hear from Palestinian-American human rights professor Nora Erekat, who will talk about the attack on Jabalia. Israel's killed at least 4 more Palestinian journalists in Gaza. Mohammed Khreis and his wife died in an airstrike on their tent near the Nuseirat refugee camp. Ahmad and Zahra Abu Sahel were killed in an Israeli airstrike targeting a school in Al-Tufa. The radio broadcaster Khaled Abu Zir was killed on Friday. This comes as the UN-backed Famine Review Committee has issued a dire warning, saying there's a, quote, strong likelihood that famine is imminent in areas of northern Gaza. In other news, Qatar has withdrawn from its role as mediator between Israel and Hamas. Israel's also continuing its assault on Lebanon, despite Israeli claims ceasefire talks are progressing. On Saturday, Israeli strikes killed 20 people in and around the ancient city of Baalbek. On Sunday, an Israeli strike on the village of Almat, north of Beirut, killed 23 people, including at least 3 children. Israel also targeted numerous villages in the West Baqa region.
This is my house. I worked so hard my whole life to build it. No one helped me. I did it all by myself through hard work to raise my family composed of 7 to 8 souls, and I'm still working actively. I found it all destroyed. I don't have in it any missiles to attack the Israelis. The enemy is a butcher with no pity nor mercy at all, even for children. We've been resistant since our childhood until the end of our lives.
Lebanese state media reports at least 10 paramedics were also killed over the weekend as Israel continues to target Lebanon's health workers. Over the weekend, Russia and Ukraine launched major drone attacks against each other. Russia reportedly fired 145 drones, while Ukraine attacked Moscow with more than 30 drones. Russian attacks overnight killed six in southern Ukraine. Meanwhile, U.S. and Ukrainian officials say 50,000 Russian and North Korean troops are planning to launch a counteroffensive in western Russia to regain land seized by Ukraine. This all comes as the Washington Post reports Donald Trump spoke on Thursday with Russian President Vladimir Putin and urged him not to escalate the war in Ukraine. The Kremlin has denied the report. The UN climate summit is underway in Baku, Azerbaijan, where government officials, civil society leaders and climate activists are gathered as the planet is on track yet again to suffer its hottest year on record and carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere reach record highs. Recent data shows wealthy countries, including the U.S. and China, embarked on an oil and gas exploration spree despite signing on to an agreement at last year's COP to transition away from coal, oil and gas. Financing for poor nations facing the brunt of the climate collapse will be a top issue at this year's COP29. Ahead of the summit, the group Global Witness released covert recordings of Azerbaijan's COP29 chief executive, Elnora Sultanov, promoting possible fossil fuel deals with someone posing as an investor. The fake investor told Sultanov they were considering sponsoring COP29 in exchange for deals with Azerbaijan's state energy firm, SOCAR. This is Sultanov.
As I said, we have a lot of pipeline infrastructure. We have a lot of gas fields that are to be developed. We have a lot of green projects that SOCAR is very interested in. There are a lot of joint ventures that could be established, potential joint ventures. Our SOCAR trading is trading oil and gas all over the world, including in Asia. So to me, these are the possibilities to explore.
Meanwhile, many delegates at COP29 are bracing for the incoming Trump presidency. Trump's transition team is reportedly already preparing to once again withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Climate Agreement. Prominent climate activist Greta Thunberg announced she is not attending COP29 over Azerbaijan's climate and human rights record. She's calling for protests tonight in Tbilisi, Georgia, where she's been meeting with local activists. She wrote on social media, quote, Azerbaijan, using COP29 as a facade, is ramping up control under a false green agenda, tightening its grip on power and escalating regional tensions, unquote. Democracy Now! Will be reporting live from COP29 in Baku, Azerbaijan, all next week from November 18th to the 22nd. Tune in to democracynow.org. In Amsterdam, police beat and arrested more than 100 pro-Palestinian protesters Sunday after they defied a ban on demonstrations following street clashes between visiting Israeli soccer fans and Dutch youth. Unrest in the city began Wednesday when fans of the Maccabi Tel Aviv football team were seen chanting pro-genocide, anti-Arab slogans and tearing down Palestinian flags. Street clashes broke out as tensions escalated before and after the soccer match. Amsterdam's mayor blamed, quote, anti-Semitic hit-and-run squads, but observers in Amsterdam said Israeli hooligans instigated the violence. The violence grew into an international story as Israel sent planes to evacuate the Israeli fans. Haiti's Transitional Council announced its ousting interim Prime Minister Gary Conille after 6 months in the position, a move labeled by Conille as illegal and which is likely to further destabilize Haiti. The former UN official had been expected to see Haiti through its long-awaited election for a new president. The council named businessman Alex Didier Fils-Aimé as the new interim Prime Minister. Fils-Aimé is a businessman, former Senate candidate, and son of the prominent Haitian activist Alex Fils-Aimé. The political shakeup comes amidst worsening gang violence and a dire humanitarian crisis in Haiti. On Friday, the UN warned famine spreading to new areas as an international Kenyan-led security force struggles to contain the bloodshed. in Pakistan. A bomb blast killed at least 26 people Saturday at a railway station in Quetta, the capital of Balochistan province. The separatist group Balochistan Liberation Army claimed responsibility for the attack. And in other news from Pakistan, thousands of supporters of jailed former Prime Minister Imran Khan rallied over the weekend to call for his release. Khan's supporters have been protesting his imprisonment on what they say are politically motivated charges, as well as the disputed results of February's elections. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at this spate of racist text messages referencing slavery that were sent to black people across the United States starting the day after Donald Trump's election victory. People in New York, in Alabama, in California, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Virginia, including students at historically black universities and even middle schoolers as young as 13 years old, reported getting a variation of this message that was addressed to them by name. Quote, "Greetings, William Hines. You have been selected to pick cotton at the nearest plantation. Please be ready November 7th, 2024 by 5 p.m. sharp with your belongings. Our executive slaves will come to your address in a black SUV. Be prepared to be searched down once you've entered." A similar text message sent to a man in Charlotte, Virginia, read, quote, "Greetings, Samuel. You've been selected to pick cotton at the nearest plantation. Be ready at 12 p.m. sharp with your belongings. Our executive slaves will come get you in a brown van. Be prepared to be searched down once you've entered the plantation. You are in Plantation Group W." Monet Miller described her reaction when she received the racist text message.
I immediately texted it the number back. Who is this? Oh, my God, profanity. And then I even tried to call it. And that's when I found out it was like from a fake text, one of those fake numbers. So it had already been discarded.
The FBI and FCC, that's the Federal Communications Commission, say they're now investigating the racist text messages, and the source remains clear. A Trump campaign remains unclear. They just know it comes from TextNow. A Trump campaign spokesman said it, quote, has absolutely nothing to do with these text messages. This is Georgia's NAACP president, Gerald Griggs.
Our response is to remind the young people where they come from, who they are, and that we do not sit back and allow people to threaten us without a response, a nonviolent, peaceful response, but a forceful response that this is our country. We're not returning to any plantation. We built this country. We'll continue to make this country move forward and live up to the promise that it gave all the citizens.
Meanwhile, Fisk University, the historically black college in Nashville, Tennessee, issued a statement calling the messages that targeted some of its students deeply unsettling. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Washington, D.C., Wisdom Cole is with us, Senior National Director of Advocacy for the NAACP. And in Columbia, South Carolina, Robert Green II, history professor at Claflin University, president of the African American Intellectual History Society, senior editor of Black Perspectives, co-editor of a book titled Invisible No More, The African American Experience at the University of South Carolina. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Professor Robert Green II, can you talk about what happened at Claflin? The students and others who you hear got these text messages and the response. Claflin is what, the oldest historically black university in South Carolina?
Yes, that is correct. And first off, thank you so much for having me on this morning. I can tell you that I heard from both students about the text messages and also from our campus security force, who sent out an email explaining to folks what the text messages were, to remain calm, but to also remain aware and alert of what was going on. Initially, when I heard about the text, I thought it was a bit of a hoax, but I soon began hearing from both students and campus security about it, and it quickly became clear that this wasn't just a Claflin problem, it was a national issue as well.
And what were the response of students, for example, who got these text messages? I mean, we hear the young woman who said, I mean, she sees the phone number that it's coming from and she texts back immediately because she was scared.
Well, certainly, I think for many of our students, it was a bit of a surprise to receive those text messages. On the other hand, our generation of students have grown up receiving a lot of text messages from a lot of unknown phone numbers. I think what makes us a bit different was the content of the messages themselves. For many students, they were surprised, they were a bit hurt, and coupled with the actual Election Day results, it has been a pretty frustrating week for many of our students. Mm.
Let me ask you, Wisdom Cole, you deal with young people around the country. Talk about what the NAACP has heard. How extensive is this?
You know, these messages are deeply disturbing, right? You know, as you said earlier, children as young as 13 have received these messages across the nation. I believe across 32 states. You know, this is a disturbing message to receive shortly after the election, right? But the sad part about it is that this is only the beginning. You know, when we see what's happening in this newly elected administration, we've seen this before, right? You know, the stripping away of diversity, equity, inclusion, the stripping away of our rights, right? You know, messages like this continue to set a precedent in terms of racism in America, in our schools, and in our phones. It's important for us to be able to protect our young people and allow them to understand that they deserve to be in those spaces, that they are a part of our community and our culture, and they're a part of what allows us to propel our future.
Now, what is the NAACP demanding, Wisdom Cole? I was interested that when the Trump campaign was asked to respond. This came out right after Trump was elected. They responded, this has nothing to do with us. They didn't go on to say, and we consider this vile and racist and it must stop. What exactly are you demanding? What do you understand from the company that was the platform for this? Was it called Text Now?
You know, regardless if you believe it has nothing to do with you, it impacts the future of our country. The real question is, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to ensure that everybody in this nation feels safe, that people feel like they can talk about their community, can talk about their culture, can be embraced, that they do not have the sense of fear? Many organizers across this nation have been working tirelessly over the last election season to ensure that we get this right. You know, it's important for us to recognize that moving forward, that there are a lot of things that are particular to our community that is going to be at stake, right? We are seeing an increase, and we've seen this before, right? An increase of racial hate in this country. And so with messages like this, we have to say enough is enough. We have to say that hate has no place here and that we have to ensure that there are protections for us at the local, state, and federal level.
Professor Robert Green II, I'm interested that you're at Claflin. Both Claflin and South Carolina State are in Orangeburg, South Carolina. A very violent history against African Americans. 1968, the Orangeburg Massacre, one of the most violent, least remembered events of the civil rights movement. February 8th, 68, crowd of students protesting at South Carolina State University, Orangeburg's only bowling alley, which was segregated. After days of escalating tensions, students started a bonfire, held a vigil. Dozens of police arrived, fired live ammunition into the crowd. Three students were killed, 28 wounded. If you can talk about that history and how people are organizing right now around these messages and the involvement now of various federal agencies investigating.
Well, certainly, whenever something like this happens to students in Orangeburg, there's always a sense of thinking about what the Orangeburg Massacre means to us in 2024. Both universities have even longer histories of confronting racism than that. Certainly have the Orangeburg movement of the 1950s and 60s, which leads up to the Orangeburg Massacre of 1968. Decades before that, you have buildings on both campuses being burned down under so-called mysterious circumstances. And so for students at Claflin and SC State, the one thing they can take solace in is that they can tap into a long history of activism protest and resistance against oppression and tyranny. Many of those veterans of the civil rights movement, such as, for example, photographer Cecil Williams, still live in the Orangeburg area even now and offer their help and support to these students in a time like this one. As for right now, I think students are organizing not just against the text messages, but they're organizing themselves for a long struggle against the upcoming second Trump administration. But for them, the text messages are in many ways another galvanizing call to resistance and thinking about new and creative ways to resist what they perceive to be a very troubling Trump administration.
And finally, Wisdom Cole in Washington, D.C. Plans are already underway for mass protests on January 18th, 2 days before the Trump inauguration. How is the NAACP dealing at this point?
You know, at this point, it's really important for us to take the time to dream of a better America, for us to be able to restore ourselves and understand about creative ways in which we can take on the most challenging problems that are going to face us in this new administration. I urge all of my organizers to be ready to defend, right? There are so many rights that we must protect in this nation. We have to organize. We have to build so that one day we can win on all levels. It's important for us in this moment in time to understand the power that is within the people, and that for us to be able to come together to organize and understand this problem is absolutely necessary. Because as we see our rights be stripped away, we're going to slowly realize that we are more common than we know.
Wisdom Cole, I want to thank you for being with us, Senior National Director of Advocacy for the NAACP, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. And Robert Green II, History Professor at Claflin University, the oldest black university in South Carolina, President of the African American Intellectual History Society, Editor of Black Perspectives, Co-Editor of Invisible No More, The African American Experience at the University of South Carolina, speaking to us from that state. Next, more than 2,000 people pack the historic Riverside Church here in New York City to discuss America and the War on Palestine, moderated by author Ta-Nehisi Coates. Stay with us.
After tonight, if you don't want this to be a secret out of the past, I will resurrect it. I'll have a good go at it. I'll streak his blood across my beard, dust my feathers with his hair, feel his ghost breathing.
Transmission by Ahaya. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. On Sunday, here in New York City, more than 2,000 people packed the historic Riverside Church for a discussion about America and the war on Palestine. It was hosted by the Palestine Festival of Literature, or PALFEST, the church, Riverside, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Gave his speech on April 4th, 1967, a year to the day before he was assassinated. The event yesterday featured several speakers, including Palestinian human rights attorney Nora Erekat, a professor at Rutgers University, author of Justice for Some, Law and the Question of Palestine. Another of the panelists was Kianga Yamata Taylor, professor of African American Studies at Princeton University and contributing writer at The New Yorker magazine. You can see our interview with Professor Yamata Taylor last week at democracynow.org. In a minute, we'll hear from human rights attorney Nora Erekat. She was introduced by the moderator and author Ta-Nehisi Coates. His new book, The Message, in part about a visit he took to the occupied West Bank and Israel that was organized by members of PALFEST, the sponsors of yesterday's event. This is what he had to say.
When I think about being here, I think about ancestors. And I think it would be wrong if we didn't proceed without acknowledging that. First of all, I was informed when I came here that this is where Edward Said's funeral was. And so it's incredibly appropriate to be here in this moment. The second thing is something that Yasmin and I talked about and have been talking about for a year, even when we did the other event before, was the fact that this was also the place where Martin Luther King stood up against the Vietnam War and was so courageous. And I want to acknowledge that in his time when he did that, a lot of people did not applaud. I want to acknowledge that there were many people who he thought of as his allies